You are here for a reason.
This news just in.
Go. We are your news now. Right on radio.
The continuous coverage, the latest information. Get the truth. Get the news.
You're listening to Right on Radio.
Welcome to Right On Radio. My name is Jeff. If it's your first time being here, I appreciate you being here. The tagline of the show is live right in the real world. And man, we're going to be talking about the real world today. Nothing in this world is really shocking anymore. And this story is not going to be one that shocks you. However, there is going to be a pretty significant plot twist as we go through this story. And this story is a testimony of someone who I love. I really do. And although this show is not about me, I want to introduce to you the way that we met before I bring my friend Bruce on. Many of you have heard my testimony. I had a significant encounter with God. I tried to let it go, but I was a single father at the time, and there was this little church that was around the corner from my house, and I thought because of my daughter, I would bring her to socialize her, and that was my excuse into walking into this little country church in the middle of nowhere, literally. But my true intentions, if I'm going to be honest with myself, was to go in there, call them hypocrites, and burn down the place, because that's how I felt. I had looked for God, found Catholicism, hated it, thought it had nothing to do with God, and I wanted nothing to do with God if that was the God that was presented to the world. God touched me in a significant way. I walked into this church, and the first person I saw was the pastor's wife, and it was, her name is Wenny. And she greeted me with just such love. It's hard to hold back the emotions. And then I went into the service, and they didn't beg for money. In fact, they never even asked for money, unlike this podcaster. And the word of God was given, and I could not argue a bit of it. It was like I had heard truth for the first time on a spiritual level. And one of the men in the church, his name is Bruce, and he was really instrumental to bringing me to the Lord. He was at the time and still is the guitar player in the church, and he leads worship amongst the congregation. And with having said that, Bruce.
Hey, Jeff.
Welcome to Right On Radio.
Good to be here.
And Bruce, I'm going to just give a little bit of a further introduction. My daughter and I was a single father, and one of the greatest memories is you and your lovely wife, Ginny, brought us to, what was it called? Worship?
Kingdom Bound?
Kingdom Bound at Darien Lake in New York. And we just had a real good time in the Lord. And Bruce's other nickname, my daughter, is Mr. Roller Coaster. because he would be pushing her around, and I think we had a little wagon or something to drag her around. She was quite small, but she loved the thrill rides. Even then, anyone that she could get on. That was quite an amazing time. Anyways, Bruce, how long have you been with the church now?
Since about probably 1988 or 1989.
So
yeah, 88.
You'd been there an awful long time. Now, I went in there, I guess it was it was 25 years ago. So it's like end of 2008, end of the summer 2008, mm-hmm. when I walked in there. And I'll never forget, I walked in there and my hair was longer than it is now. I was wearing this shirt full of skulls. And Wenny said to me, "Oh, that reminds me of the Valley of Dry Bones." So I had no idea what that was. But, you know, I wore a shirt that would probably scare church people.
Thing is we've had a lot of scary people come to our church.
Very true. Very true. But, and Bruce, you and I hit it off at the time, although I never played guitar in the church alongside of you. We kind of hit that instant rapport because of your playing and stuff like that. And I think we became friends pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So your story is a story of redemption. And although it's going to focus in one particular area for the audience, I think this applies to many facets of our society today. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, society is inverted and, you know, people are being celebrated. What's bad is good and what's good is bad. And everything is upside down. And I would say, and maybe I hope you'll agree with this, Bruce, but I would say the principal thing is just like the Lord says, we battle not against flesh and blood, but about princes and principalities.
Absolutely. And I believe that was a factor in the original part of my testimony and is even more so now.
Yeah. And actually, you know what? Because I introduced you as a guitar player, could you play us a quick song before we get into your testimony?
Which one?
You know what? The one song that you and your wife introduced that has always stuck with me is Lamentations.
Lamentations 3, 21 and 22. This was an interesting song because it came about through my wife. She just brought it up one day and I thought I'd put some music to it. We were meeting sort of as four different people in the church at the time and she came up with it, so I put some music to it. So it goes sort of like this. When I gotta find a key. When I recall to my mind, therefore have I hopes of the Lord's mercies that were not consumed. When I recall to my mind, therefore have I hope, so of the Lord's mercies that I'm not consumed. Your love is new every morning, new in our lives day by day. Your love is new in our lives day by day. Just a little chorus.
Amen. Amen. That was perfect. And, you know, we all have experienced that. And, you know, we go through trials and tribulations and sometimes it gets tough. But then there's that new love in the morning, you know, a new day. And we get to start again clean. You know, it's funny, someone had posted on Twitter the other day, actually, Stephen, who I think is quite funny on Twitter, but he posted, "Tell me, Christians, how you are so pure." And he's a Christian, by the way. But he goes, how do you live such a sinless life? And I responded to him. I said, well, actually, I'm perfectly clean. It lasted a few seconds. I just repented. I'm clean. Oh, there it goes.
You know? Yeah.
I thought of something else.
We don't become sin free until we come to heaven and be with Jesus. So
that's right. That's right. But I pray that I sin less every day. That's my prayer. So Bruce, I'm going to hand over the floor to you, and why don't you bring us through your testimony?
Okay. When I first came to this church, I was really kind of scared to go to it because it was out in the country. I'd never been to a church like that in my life. I grew up in the church. I was probably the only one in my family of six kids that went to church, and I was looking for a church to go to, and my wife, who wasn't my wife at the time, she's disabled, and she needed a ride to church from Toronto to Stouffville area, so I decided to go. Well, the thing was, it wasn't the me you see that went. It was somebody named Diane. I was born as Bruce, but when I went with Ginny, I was her girlfriend. And that was, it was just hard because there were things about the church that I didn't understand. I mean, it's not like a church where everything is set up ahead of time and what you're going to do, you know, how the worship goes. Everybody just would pray out when they wanted to pray out, you know, at appropriate times, and they'd start a hymn or a chorus and everybody else would join in. And they had the gifts of the Spirit, and I'd never experienced that before. The interesting thing was that nobody knew that I had been a Bruce before. And the part that was probably the hardest for me at the time, you know, after being there for a couple of meetings, was Ginny said, Bruce, you have to wear a head covering. 1 Corinthians 11, I believe. You have to wear a head covering. And I read all about head coverings, and I thought, I'm going to sit in that chair, and a bolt of lightning is going to come down and knock me off my seat. So that was my introduction to that church. Now, if we want to go back into the past of where everything started, I was born Bruce. I was always a bit of a sissy kid, I guess. People called me a sissy anyway, and I got bullied a lot. I tended to hang out more with girls than I did with guys. And I related more to girls than I did guys. When it came to high school, I signed up for home ec. I mean, everybody does it now, but that back then, if you were a guy, it was either home ec or it was either a shop or nothing, you know. And I lined up for home ec, and they said, no, you can't come over here. So anyways, I always felt different. And I had an aunt who was the same age as myself. I don't know whether my mom wanted a girl instead of a boy. I was the first child born. But she used to make a lot of clothes for my aunt. And since Dale and I were the same size, she used to use me to model the stuff. So, you know, I felt very different right from my younger years. And as I got older, we had a lot of family problems. My family split up. And, I'd go to high school, and high school was a big problem because we were living in a tent. My dad had lost our house, and we were living in a tent, and I had to go back to the school I was registered at. And I was in Alliston. The school was Western Tech. And I had to go. They told me that because I was living in Alliston, I'd have to go down to the City of Toronto Board of Education and get permission. And found I couldn't. staying Western. So I walked the streets of Toronto for the rest of the day, and a man came up beside me and followed me around and was talking to me and asked me what I was doing. I said, well, I was thinking of going to a movie. And he said, do you mind if I come along? Well, the movie was a bit of an experience because I met a strange man who kept on putting money on my lap, and I had no idea what he was after. And even before that, I had encounters with friends of mine that were inappropriate, like, you know, and in a sexual sort of way. So I really started wondering what was wrong. I saw the story on Christine Jorgensen in one of the movie theaters, and I said, that's got to be my problem. Even with girlfriends, as I was getting older, they left me because I was embarrassing to them. You know, I joined one out on the field one day after a football game and put my jacket down around my lap and cheerleaded with her, which was a bit of a time. So anyways, I told my brother-in-law to be, this is Ginny was my second marriage, told my brother-in-law to be that I think I was supposed to be a girl. And then I told my dad, and my dad said that, you know, all teenagers go through this sort of thing. You know, they have questions as they're going through puberty and everything. It'll pass. Except it didn't pass. It got stronger and stronger. So I started seeing a doctor, and the first thing the doctor said was, oh, you're a homosexual. No, I'm not a homosexual. I had no interest in people in the same sex. I just felt that mine was wrong. And the thing was, you know, you hear the line all the time about being trapped in a man's body or being trapped in a woman's body. I was never trapped. I was lost. I didn't know where I fit in. I always wanted to know why. So eventually I ended up at a behavioral hypnotherapist, and we went through all sorts of different things that people have to understand. The hypnotherapy is not something they're, you know, they can say you're a bird and you're a bird. You pretend, well, you don't pretend, you under hypnosis, you're supposed to be a bird, but you know what you're doing all the time. And she asked me once what if there was somebody else with me. And I thought, no, I'm not schizophrenic. I can't answer that. And she said, is there somebody else there? And I said, yeah. And she said, what's your name? And I said, Diane. Why are you here, Diane? Because Bruce can't make it on his own. He needs somebody with him. So anyways, my hypnotherapist said, well, the next time you come in and see me, you'll come in as Diane. Well.
So let me just jump in here for a second, because I think there's a couple points that I don't want to be lost. So this was never a desirous thing for, you know, ingrained in you that you liked the same sex. It was that you were lost. And
I never ever was interested in the same sex.
And when you went to a doctor, and so the system, he labeled you. He said, you are this.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, that's coming from someone with authority for a young, confused kid. You're a kid at this point still.
Yeah.
And then you go to a hypnotherapist, and what comes out is, and it isn't a second personality, but... and I'm asking the question. I'm not, not going to assume anything, but do you think that that was a spirit?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I just never really understood it at the time.
Oh, how would you?
I didn't. So eventually the Clark Institute of Psychiatry had a whole program for gender dysphoria,
So I wrote to them and told them what my issues were. And by this time, my first marriage was getting really difficult. My ex was a little bit more dominant in our relationship than I was. And she sort of wore the pants in the family.
How old would you have been at this point when you're first married?
We got married at 20.
At 20. Okay.
Yeah.
So you're still very young. You're a young adult now.
Yeah, I was a young adult. And, you know, even though I told my brother-in-law before that I was having this problem, I don't think I told my wife because I wanted to be who I am. I mean, a lot of things, you know, people that go through this, they join the army or something like that and make a man out of themselves. I wanted to get past and figuring that, you know, getting married, having a child, which I did, that would get rid of it, but it didn't. So my wife got really upset with it, and eventually we separated. And this is while we were in process with the Clark Institute of Psychiatry. And they sent you all over the place to endocrinologists and you know, chromosome people and all sorts of different places, you know, blood tests. They even did one experiment called a phallometric test, where they put a vacuum tube over your part and then show you dirty pictures or pictures of your own clothing and watch for any changes in the pressure inside this tube. I mean, it was really invasive, but it was all to find out, you know, is this, you know, a sexual interest? Is that why you're doing this?
Well, you know what? I'm seeing something else. And, you know, hindsight is obviously 20/20, but the fact that there would be an Institute of Gender Dysphoria, their main mission would be to keep themselves in a job. They don't want to disprove it. They need to prove as many cases as possible exactly to justify their means. So the system is walking you through into more confusion. They're helping your confusion. They're not helping you. They're not addressing any root.
It was ideally, for their research. And the head person there, her and I got to be really friendly. In fact, the thing was, is that, and this is the important part for anybody, as far as I'm concerned, going through this, is they said, basically, if you believe this is what's true, prove it. So the way that you prove it is by going out and living your chosen gender role before surgery for 5 years to find out, is that really what you want? So it's like, you know, even though for me it wasn't, it's like putting on the greatest act and that you've ever put on to fool everybody that you are a female, not a male. So I did as many things that would, you know, like when I was still a guy, I had earrings in both ears. And people would say, well, I understand one ear, but I don't understand two ears. And then, you know, I got a perm and I took makeup lessons and all that
stuff. And did you start speaking gay speak, you know, with that slur or whatever? Yeah. No?
When I went into this, Jeff, I was intent on being who I wanted to be. I was not intent on doing anything speech-wise or anything.
And like you weren't aiming at fitting into a group or anything like that. This was a solo journey.
That's all I wanted to be, is I wanted to be fully female. And this is where the spiritual part got into it, as far as I'm concerned, because there's a drive. When you're going through this, there is a drive that you will go through whatever to eventually reach your final goal. Yeah. And that meant losing your family, losing your friends, losing your job. There were all sorts of things that, you know, I had to consider as I was going through this. Can I live on my own? Can I find a job as a female even though I still have male parts. So I chose probably one of the most difficult professions to go into was nursing, because I'd be working at that time mostly women. And the part that got me stuck was we had to do what they call pericare, which is cleaning each other between your legs. Well, that would have been a problem, because here I was as Diane and sure don't look like a Diane. So I had to tell the teacher. And then people in my class found out, because before it was no problem at all. So the teacher had to tell the dean or the assistant dean, and the dean had to go to the main dean to see whether I could even stay in nursing. So I had a lot of ladies on my side, but I also had a lot of ladies that were very angry. So.
But you had the integrity before any uncomfortable situation came up, exactly. You know.
Exactly. So they decided in the end that they would let me start and see how my first term went. I would be given a separate change room. And I mean, to me at the time, I wasn't in there for anything except to change. But, you know, that's just the way everybody felt. And, you know, you're seeing that a lot in nowadays too, with all the gender issues about same washrooms, same change rooms, sports and everything. So I was sort of segregated in that way, but my first part of the course was in geriatrics, because they figured if I can't fool the old people, I won't fool anybody. So I had no problems with the first part. So anyways, it was a struggle. It was a struggle in the end, and because the dean wanted me out of there. So I left the nursing program before I finished. I finished my first term, and that was as far as it got. So I decided I needed to go get a job. So I got a job in a nursing home, and I worked there for 5 years without anybody knowing. And then sort of somewhere in the 5 years, they eventually approved me for surgery. First of all, with the 5 years is not just to be able to do what you had to do to get through it. I mean, it was a prerequisite before they'd consider you for surgery. So I did. I got the surgery. Now, the thing is that I'm missing out on a few things here too that were really important. One, as a guy, you have a problem with facial hair. So you have to go to an electrolysis through electrolysis to remove all these hair pieces, follicles, one by one, which it can be painful. And it was quite expensive and time. It took time. I mean, I had to let it grow out a bit to for them to be able to work on it. And, you know, I got a lady's metro pass, and I got stopped by the bus driver saying, "Hey, you got the wrong pass," because I had a little bit of hair on the side of my face. And I said, "You know, I have a hormone problem, but the pass is right." And then also you had to get all your identification changed.
Well, yeah.
Which was nuts. And then the other issue was that I had a big Adam's apple. Now, there was a doctor at Wellesley Hospital at the time that was doing vocal cord surgery. And to do the vocal cord surgery, they would remove your Adam's apple and they would stretch your vocal cords. But like a lot of the things at that time, it was experimental. So, you know, you had to sign off that it's experimental, and if anything happens, well, that's not our fault. So, you know, I got that done. I had to learn to speak again. I had to go to a speech pathologist to learn how to, that women tends to enunciate, and they go up and down and up and down with their voices, where men just are an almost monotone. I mean, it was crazy. So I did that. And then you have to find hormone therapy. You know, it's pretty easy to get now, but back then it wasn't.
What year would we be talking about, roughly?
I had my surgery in 84, 85, somewhere around then.
But yeah, you were really like, you know, it was uncommon.
Yeah, I wasn't a pioneer anymore, but it was not very common. I mean, when the gender clinic at the Clark passed somebody through, they didn't do like 20, 30, 40, 50 a year. They did two or three or four. You know, it wasn't done, and it was covered under OHIP.
Which is the Canadian medical plan, for those of you who are listening elsewhere.
Yeah. I mean, you had to pay a percentage of it, but OHIP covered it because it was a research project by a hospital. So, yeah, finally came. I got involved with a group called the Foundation for the Advancement of Canadian Transsexuals. And through them, I found doctors that would be willing to give you hormone therapy. And I did that until the Clark approved me for hormone therapy. But for basically through most of it, I had to go without. So the day finally came for surgery, and I sat down and talked to the doctor, and the doctor said, "Now, why should I give you the surgery?" I said to him, "Because I want to feel whole." He says, "What if I don't give it to you?" I said, "Well, that's your choice." I said, "You know, I've met so many people through my peers that were here for other reasons. They either had sexual reasons, or some of them were homosexual to start off with. But the thing is most homosexuals wouldn't have want to get redesigned that way. So the one thing that I had found was there were a lot of my friends had committed suicide. And that was a matter of acceptance from their families, from their friends. I mean, let's face it, if everything is taken away from you, then you're by yourself. And that's where other things spiritual come in. Because when you're by yourself, let's face it, we all want to be loved. And if some group wants to take you in and they love you, then you can get in all sorts of stuff.
You know what? Glad you touched on that, because I, from my perspective, I see that happening a lot today. You know, there's a kid who doesn't quite fit in with the crowd or whatever, similar to what you had maybe. And, you know, the good crowd is very hard to get into. They're usually not very accepting, but the bad crowd, and this could be, you know, the pot smokers, the criminal guys, or it could be, you know, in today's terms, the gay community, they're very welcoming. All of those groups are very welcoming. And, you know, once you get in, you start to feel normal around them, and then you try something and it wasn't so bad. Okay, maybe I'm this. And I think a lot of people are just going these ways to be loved, just exactly what you say.
Exactly. They want to fit in, but they can't. So somebody shows them a bit of attention and they get drawn in. I mean, I had a friend who had become a prostitute because that's what helped her to survive through the whole transgender process. She never ended up having surgery, but, you know, we went out a couple times, and there used to be a coffee shop just north of 519 Church Street. And that's where a lot of people used to get picked up. And I walked in there with her one night, and she came back to me and she says, "That guy over there, he's interested." For what? I mean, I'm not.
You were really ignorant to this stuff.
I'm not dumb, but, you know, I just.
You weren't thinking about it.
No, I wasn't. I wasn't. So, you know, like, I got out of that, you know, I did fit in with the gay community, but we had our own program through the 519. So, you know, most of the people that came were having gender issues. I started my own group called Why We Help You to Better Help Yourself. And because I believed in what the Clark was doing with the 5-year trial, a lot of people said, well, we help you, so better help yourself, because I stuck to that. I went to schools where teachers were having problems with kids in their classes with those issues. I became a peer counselor. And, you know, I saw every little thing that's out there, but so many people had so many other issues that, you know, their gender issue was just one of them. You know, you had to, it was all in. And I mean, I think I don't know if I said it, but like I even had the one that took me just to the rep coffee shop. She brought me down to her friend who was a black witch. You know, I went to his house. He had an altar and everything, and put his hand on my head and jumped back and said, "You're too strong. You have to get out of here."
Wow.
So anyways, day came to surgery, and the surgeon said, "Why should I do this for you?" And I said, "Well, you know, the fact is that you don't have to. I mean, I want it, and I'm willing to go through it all. But what you're doing is not always doing the right thing." He said, "What do you mean by that?" I said, "Well, some people have gone on to be prostitutes. Some people have killed themselves." And he says, "Well, how in the heck am I supposed to know whether what I'm doing is right if nobody ever tells me?" Because there was no follow-up on it.
And even today, by the way, just speaking of which, because the numbers are staggering, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but last time I heard it, people who have transitioned, it's like almost almost 50-50 of what people will commit suicide.
Yeah.
It's staggering.
You see, this is what the problem is with now, because it's on demand. Nobody has to go through any trial period. Nobody has to be tested. You either, if you got the money and you got somebody that'll do it, they'll do it.
Well, and even children now who can't even make that proper decision.
No. Well, there's a parenting issue there, because, you know.
But in a lot of places, Bruce, they're taking, and yeah, I agree, there's a parenting issue, but in a lot of places, they're allowing it to start, like in California, without even the consent of the parents.
I know. And if the parents step in, and they can get arrested.
Yeah.
It's taken away from them. I know what's going on. But the thing is that, you know, if you get a child to do it, then, I mean, this is the conundrum in it all, is that if you do it when you're a child, then you don't have to grow up knowing the other side. You don't grow up, if you're a male, you don't grow up learning to be a male. You grow up learning to be a female. And when you start on the puberty blockers and the hormones and everything, they do make a lot of changes in your body, and not in just your body, but also in your mind. Because I found, as I was going through this, that I thought different. I mean, I grew up that way, but there was a difference between after I had the surgery and everything and the hormone therapy for years. Then, yeah, something in my mind that just felt different.
Well, listen, you know, Bruce, and my audience is certainly familiar with this, although the story is new. I'm not an expert in it or anything, but when we're talking about drugs and we're talking about medical institutions, we're talking about pharmakia, which is witchcraft.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, we did the surgery. I had to sign a form to say it was experimental surgery and that I could die. The surgery took 8 hours. The thing is when you get to the point where you do that, you say, the heck with everything else. If I die, I die. If I don't, but this is how strong the drive is. And this is why I'm saying that it's spiritual. And, you know, you can go through all your social and environmental and things. I mean, there are real reasons for this, like hermaphrodism and Klinefelter syndrome and Turner syndrome and a whole pile of other things. But a child can't make that decision. They don't have that understanding. Then you get to the part where you're a teenager and growing into an adult, and then you have to lose. Well, I can't say lose it, because you've already had developed your muscle mass, and you know there's a lot of things that you can't change. You know, if you're going as a female to male, you can have a mastectomy. You can do hormone therapy. You grow a beard. I don't know how surgeries changed, but at the time for women, they had no way of making a penis at the time. They could make a flap. Some people had, pardon the terminology, had things fall off because they just...
You know what? And I, this isn't something I study, Bruce, but
yeah,
it just, my common logic tells me that they can replace hearts, they can do all kinds of stuff. They cannot make a woman into a man, they cannot make a man into a woman.
No.
I don't think they ever will be able to.
It's like, you know, you can paint the barn, but you can't change the everything like that. I mean, you can make everything look right. I got up in the stirrups one day to have my checkup, and the first thing when she tried to put the speculum in, said, "Oh, you've had a hysterectomy," but she didn't know.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but then you go through all the processes as a woman. I mean, first of all, there's the job issues, which has changed a lot. Like back when I was doing it, if you wanted a good paying job as a woman, they were hard to come by, you know, and even today, I mean, you're still fighting for that sort of thing. Physical issues. I hated shaving my legs. Stupid little things like that. The recovery period is quite long. You have to wear a pad for a long time because there's a lot of stuff dripping. And the hormone therapy is for the rest of your life, because if you don't take the hormones, and I don't, I quit taking them. I'm 70 years old now. I quit taking the hormones, but there's a danger of osteoporosis. But if you keep on the hormones, there's more of a danger of cancer. So, and the thing is you're disfigured for life. There's no way of reversing any of that. So, you know, it's a big step. And, you know, if people commit suicide and get depressed and all that, you got to be a pretty strong person to go through it.
Let's bring it forward a little bit.
Okay.
And when did you decide to become Bruce again? Tell me about how that came about.
Okay. Well, it started with Ginny bringing me to her church in the head cover. So I went to the pastor, told him what had happened. Ginny and I had done what a lot of ladies do. Let's have a sleepover. We slept in the same bed. We didn't do anything. I mean, that's what we do. We slept in the same bed, but we didn't do anything. But I had to tell, you know, they asked me, the pastor asked me, have you and Ginny been sleeping together? Oh, yeah, we slept in the same bed a couple times. Well, that was bad. So when he prayed for me, he said, and he took it from Romans 1 and told me that murderers and homosexuals and immoral and all this list of people at the bottom, you're worse than any of them.
Now, this was the pastor before Walt, right? Yeah.
Yes, it is. It was Sandy. You're worse than any of them. And as he was praying for me, he's saying, Lord, I pray for this woman. I mean, he's never experienced this sort of stuff before. He had no idea. I pray for this woman, and, you know, she's got to change back to where she was. And I'm sitting here thinking, but you want me to be back to a he again. Why are you saying she? And so at that point, I gave my life to the Lord, but it meant a lot of changes. I was living with a friend. I had to leave that friend who had also gone through the same thing as me. I worked for the TTC at the time. I had to go in and tell my boss, hey, I'm going to be using different bathrooms next week. And Sandy said to me, and we can't keep you in the same church. We're going to move you to our church in Mississauga, and you're going to go there as a man.
Wow. How did he come up with that?
Well, he wanted to keep Ginny and I away from each other because he said I was on an operating table and that I needed as little interference from the outside as possible. So they dealt with me by sending me to the other church. And then they had to deal with Ginny because she'd been sleeping with me, which was, you know, I don't want to put our church in a bad way, but you know.
It was very fundamentalist. It
had to be dealt with, and Ginny was excommunicated. So, but Walt said to Ginny before she left the church that if you ever need to talk, I will be there for you. So, anyways, I went to the men's washrooms at the TTC and had to tell all my passengers. I mean, I've got passengers that have known me for 10 years, you know, that, yeah, this is what I'm going through. So everything was had to be done. I mean, there's something I watched with Jonathan Cahn last week, and, you know, I thought of a Peter Tosh and Mick Jagger song as "You Gotta Walk and Don't Look Back." And he was saying, you know, when the Israelites were being chased by by Pharaoh's army, they all of a sudden came to the Red Sea. Now they had their choice. They could stay there and die, or they could go back to Egypt, or they could take a look at these two towering walls of water in front of them and trust that something was going to happen. It's the same with Sodom and Gomorrah. They were told to leave and not look back. And Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt when she turned back. It's the same as a drug addict or an alcoholic. Is if you don't take that step forward and keep going forward, if you look back and you go back to that, it can have that power over you.
Yeah. And more power. It's like, you know, it comes back as legion, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I made the step forward. I can't say that. I mean, Ginny and I eventually got married, and we've been married for 35 years now. And, you know, I just believed in the Lord that he would help me through all this. And, oh, the other thing that happened while I was at the other church, because I was living with a friend and I had to go through all these changes. Remember the old English board up on the Gardiner Expressway? I was praying to the Lord one night as I was going home from Ginny's. And I said, Lord, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? You want me to do this? And all of a sudden across the English board, it said, don't get caught in the vacuum caused by those drifting backwards.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know if it stayed that way, but that's what I saw. And when I asked again, another board on a thing said ethics, you know, about leaving my friend and stuff. So one night I was sitting down with my friend that I used to live with. This is really where everything turned, because I was so lost. I was feeling like a ping pong ball bouncing from side to side, because half my friends knew me as Diane, and half my friends knew me. Or some of my friends knew me as Bruce, or my family did anyway. So, you know, how am I going to do this. I mean, it's not like it's a balancing trick where you have to, you can be this way and you can be that way. You have to be either this way or either that way. And I was talking to my friend one night in a restaurant. And I was trying to figure out, where did all this start? So I started drawing little circle pictures of my life and what happened between 1 and 5 and 6 and 10 and, you know, 7 and 15 and everything, trying to figure out where all this started. And that day I was in church, there was a tongue. And the tongue came out as, "Why are you so afraid? I've been with you right from the very beginning. I've seen everything you went through. And I couldn't stop you. You had to go through it to experience it. I was even there when you started drawing little circle pictures to your friend. If you can't open the door, I can't help you." That was the interpretation. Now, whether it was, you know, audible to everybody in the church or whether it was just audible to me, I just about fell off my chair. And years later, I also had another word from the Lord that said, "I'm sorry you had to go through all that, but you had to find out who you were. And the truth is the Bruce part of you and the Diane part of you were always there You just had to find some way of putting them together." Amen. So now you can put them together and you can live.
And my observation, Bruce, you know, I've known you 25 years now. You live a very complete and productive life. You know, you've always been, first of all, your ability to serve and your desire to serve. It's rare to find someone who really has the gift like you do, that just does it because you want to. I don't have near that gift. You've been inspirational to men. And there's so many lessons that people can draw out of this. And one of the ones that I want to direct people to, Bruce, is that all sin is bad for God.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce's sin isn't worse than any of my sin, and my sin isn't worse than his. It's not worse than yours. And these days, because the numbers are going up, because of the propaganda, because of the push, it's a demonic push.
That drive has become more potent in this time and age because everything has been approved. I mean, the government says, yeah, we'll do it for you.
Well, and they're conditioning kids from the time they're little to be able to, they're encouraging them to make those choices. And they're programming many people, and it doesn't stick with everyone, but it does with more than what they're used to be. And the thing is as we encounter people who are in these positions, please don't read Romans 1 to them and say you're worse. And you know what? I'm not condemning what Sandy said. That was his conviction. The Lord, he'd probably never run into it. He was shocked, mm-hmm, or whatever, but it didn't help. It didn't help, I don't think.
No, he had another line that helped even better. You can put this one out there. If you think God made a mistake, you go tell him.
Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one. And yeah, we need to love people back into stuff, and don't be condemning. Don't be a more righteous than now, because you're not. I'm not. And just like when I walked into that church and I walked in there with attitude and I really didn't want to have anything to do with it, I was completely diffused within seconds because I was loved, mm-hmm, by Wennie, by Bruce, by Walt, by everybody, really. And I was I don't think I would have been an easy nut to crack otherwise.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it? Unconditional love. I mean, the thing is that we believe what the word says, and it doesn't mean that we're going to stop loving you. We won't necessarily support you through your effort, but that doesn't mean we still won't love you.
That's right. And that's the line. You can't feed the sin.
We're all human beings, Jeff, regardless of what we've done and what we go through.
That's right. So if we, Bruce, if someone has someone in their life or knows someone who's going through this or having thoughts about going through it, and assuming you're talking to someone of faith, because this is a faith-based broadcast, Bruce, how would you tell the parent, the friend, whoever it is, to address that person with the love from the Lord?
I would say, first of all, find out what other issues they're going through. Because, you know, the gender issue is usually related to a lot of other things that are going on in the person's life. Because this is a no turning back situation. And because the spiritual drive is in them, it's very, very hard to tell somebody, no, you can't do that. It really is. I mean, I was willing to die for it, just like Jesus is willing to die for us, man. But not the same way, but I was willing to die and take all the chances I could for it because I wanted to be me. I just didn't know who I was. So
asking questions, that's solid advice, because not only do you get to find out more information on what they're going through, but when you ask someone questions about themselves, it's actually showing you care.
It is. It is. And, you know, my doctor taught me something that I thought was really neat way of addressing some of these situations, but it's not as much for a kid as it is for an adult, was to put a chair in front of yourself and take a clipboard and say, well, Jeff, what's going on today? And, you know, you're experiencing this, 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 and this. Let's look at those things. Because, you know, you can't lie to yourself. You know, you can stand in front of a psychologist or a psychiatrist and tell him whatever he wants to hear. But you can't lie to yourself. So then look at those issues that you're going through and say, you know, how can I deal with this? Can I deal with this? Can I deal with this? And then look at the alternatives. I mean, I would say gender reassignment would be the last thing. I mean, if giving a baby, having a baby is painful, this was no fun either. I can't ever say that I knew what that kind of pain was that when a woman has a baby, but it was agony for a little bit. And the fact that I can't change anything other than we got a scammer calling.
Wait, Bruce, can you get in?
Anyways, that's the first thing. The second part, I mean, you don't just go. I'm still with the Clark on this one. Is you just don't go out and, you know, put a scalpel and take everything off and redesign. Try it out.
You know what? I thought that was a pretty balanced approach to it. Like, obviously, I'm against the whole process, but I don't know what's in someone's mind or anything like that. But at least a five-year cool down period or adaption period or something that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I mean, once it's done, it's done. So yeah, go out and see how you fit in. See if you can get a job. See if you fit in with your family, your friends, and all that sort of stuff as that person. You know, you might find out that you're not transgender. You might find out that you have an interest in the same sex. I mean, there's a whole pile of issues there that have to be uncovered before you take that final step.
And I'd pray that within that 5 years, the Lord would dispatch someone in and, you know, just kind of minister to them. Because I truly believe that if someone lays all their problems on the altar, yeah, the Lord will take care of it for them. And the but thing they is, really have to let the Lord be king.
Yeah. But the thing is that you're not going to be able to convince very many people that want to go through it.
No, and especially if there's a demon whispering in your ear telling you that you need to do this, right? Like, yeah, that's hard.
They don't want to be tested. They just want the surgery. And, you know, test by fire. This, if it's going to work for you, it's going to work for you. But, I mean, I do believe that only two sexes were made. I don't believe in all this other stuff that's going on. I know they have struggles because I had struggles going through the nursing program and getting everything changed. I know that part's not easy, but, you know, I'm sorry, you know, for people that are gay out there. I'm sorry, but if you're just you, you're just you, regardless what I don't, because what I went through, I don't understand those challenges. I mean, I go up to Shoppers Drug Mart and they have the little LGBTQT flag in the window and says, everyone is welcome. Well, weren't they welcome before?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand that part. I had my challenges, yes, but just don't understand it, Jeff. But it's the way the world is, you know, you have to make a point.
Well, we understand that
in the world now, you have to make a point. And if you don't, well, then you got to stand out in the street and you got to protest. And, you know, you get people that like the governments that are saying, you know, like, I don't know if you knew, but before Biden got voted in, I've got a bunch of papers that were demands by the gay community that, you know, if you want our vote, this is what you have to do for us.
Yeah.
You know,
it's not clearly of Christ. So it's from the other camp.
Yeah.
Right. But, you know, God works through his people and the devil works through people as well. Hmm. The devil hates people. And if he can do anything to mess you up and take you away from identifying, you know, as a child of God, he's going to do that. And by the way, with the legislation that's going through in Canada right now, I could do life in prison for what I just said.
Yeah, I know. Everything is so darn upside down and backwards. If an alien landed in front of my house right now, I wouldn't be surprised.
No, it's coming. It's coming, Bruce. I can all, if I was more bold, I'd give you the date. But Bruce, why don't I know when I asked you if you'd be willing to play a song, you had one in mind.
Yeah.
Would you play a song and we'll close it out here and just.
Oh, I lost my guitar pick. Well, it doesn't matter.
I really believe this broadcast is going to help someone.
Okay.
Maybe a whole bunch of people.
Okay. The other song that I chose was a song called Rain in Me. Now, I was in a prayer meeting one day, and I had a vision from the Lord about this song. And it's more than what it says. First of all, I had a vision of sitting in a mud hole covered with mud, and it started raining. And all that mud got washed away, which reminded me of the cleansing that the Lord can do on you. So rain on me. Then he gave me the picture of how he wants me to come to him. And I got the word rain, R-E-I-N, as in to rain me in, pull me in closer. And then with what the name of the song was rain in me, was to live in me. And to help me through my life being one with you, rain in me. So that's where I got, that's one of the songs that really was important to me. So rain in me, sovereign Lord, rain in me. Rain in me.
Sovereign Lord, reign in me. Captivate my heart. Let your kingdom come. Establish there your throne. Let your will be done. Reign in me. Sovereign Lord, reign in me. Reign in me. Sovereign Lord, reign in me.
That's just beautiful, Bruce.
Well, thank you for having me on, Jeff.
Bruce, it's actually been on my heart for a long time, and I just reached out to you, and I'm just so glad you're willing to share. Obviously, the Lord let you go through it for a reason, and, you know, I pray that this broadcast and your testimony will help someone, if not many people.
Yeah, still here.
That's right. And doing well.
Trying anyway.
I get to come up and visit you guys one of these days. Do it. I do the Bible studies on Sunday mornings now, but maybe I'll make it up there for a prayer meeting or something, or a special event.
That'd be special. Would be good to have you again.
Right on. Hey, anyways, listen, everyone, thanks for being here. Thanks for listening to Bruce and this story. It's obviously very personal to me, because as I mentioned, I do love Bruce and his wife, Ginny, and the church under Walt and Winnie. I never really knew the previous pastor, but it's a loving church, and Bruce is a big part of it now. And it's just been a beautiful thing. So remember, everyone, to love your God, love your family, love your neighbor as yourself, even if they're going through a time like this, and make a difference in your community.
Right on, right on, right on. Right on radio.